Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 13, Adhyaya Prakashika. This second chapter describes the dynasties of the sons of Manu, headed by Karusha. After Sudumna accepted the order of Vanaprastha and departed for the forest, Vaivasvata Manu, being desirous of sons, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead and consequently begot 10 sons like Maharaj Ikshvaku. All of whom were like their father. One of these sons, Prishadra, was engaged in the duty of protecting cows at night with a sword in his hand. Following the order of a spiritual master, he would stand in this way for the entire night. Once in the darkness of night, a tiger seized a cow from the cowshed, and when Prishadra came to know this, he took a sword in his hand and followed the tiger. Unfortunately, when he finally approached the tiger, he could not distinguish between the cow and the tiger in the dark, and thus he killed the cow. Because of this, his spiritual master cursed him to take birth in a Shudra family. But Prishadra practiced mystic yoga, and in bhakti yoga he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he voluntarily entered a blazing forest fire, thus relinquishing his material body and going back home, back to Godhead. Kavi, the youngest son of Manu, was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from his very childhood. From Manu's son known as Karusha, a sect of Kshatriyas known as Karushas was generated. Manu also had a son known as Drishta, from whom another sect of Kshatriyas was generated. But although they were born of one who had the qualities of a Kshatriya, they became Brahmanas. From Nriga, another son of Manu, came the sons and grandsons known as Sumati. Sumati, Bhuta, Jyoti, and Vasu. From Vasu in succession came Pratika, and from him came Oghavan. Descending in order from the seminal dynasty of Narishyanta, another son of Manu, were Chitrasena, Riksha, Midvan, Purna, Indrasena, Vitihotra, Satyashrava, Urushrava, Devadatta, and Agnivesha. From the Kshatriya known as Agnivesha came the celebrated Brahmin dynasty known as Agniveshyayana. From the seminal dynasty of Drishta, another son of Manu, came Nabhaga, and from him in succession came Balandana, Vatsapriti, Pramshu, Pramati, Kanitra, Chakshusha, Vimim Shati, Ramba, Kani Netra, Karan Dhamma, Adikshit, Maruta, Dhamma, Raja Vardhana, Suhriti, Nara, Kevala, Duntuman, Vegavan, Buddha, and Tanina Bindu. In this way, many sons and grandsons were born in this dynasty. From Tribindu came a daughter named Ilavila, from whom Kuvera took birth. Trina Bindu also had three sons named Vishala, Shunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. The son of Vishala was Hemachandra. His son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama. The sons of Samyama were Devaja, Somadatta. That was another son. Krashva's son. Okay. Somadatta performed an Ashwamedha sacrifice, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, he achieved the supreme perfection of going back home, back to Godhead. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 14. Prishadra returns back to Godhead. 15 to 36, dynasties of the sons of Vaivasvata Manu. Verses 1 to 14. Prishadra returns back to Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, when the son of Sudumna had thus gone to the forest to accept the order of Vanaprastha, Vaivasvata Manu, Shraddhadev, being desirous of getting more sons, performed severe austerities on the bank of the Yamuna for 100 years.
Wasn't he supposed also to some kind of Vanaprastha?
Sorry?
Wasn't he supposed also to get Vanaprastha?
Maybe, because he's working on the Manu level. They last a lot longer than the kings, because they'll go through 71 cycles of the yugas, while the king will be on our time. Then, because of his desire for sons, the Manu known as Shraddhadeva worshipped the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, the Lord of the demigods. Thus, he got 10 sons exactly like himself. Among them all, Ikshvaku was the eldest. Among these sons, Prishadra, following the order of a spiritual master, was engaged as a protector of cows. Footnote 2. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 3. One who becomes Virasana takes the vow to stand all night with a sword to give protection to the cows. Because Prishadra was engaged in this way, it is to be understood that he had no dynasty. We can further understand from this vow accepted by Prishadra how essential it is to protect the cows. Some son of a Kshatriya would take this vow to protect the cows from ferocious animals, even at night. What then is to be said of sending cows to slaughterhouses? This is the most sinful activity in human society. He would stand all night with a sword to give the cows protection. Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. Then the very strong tiger seized the cow. Or when the very strong tiger seized the cow screamed in distress and fear. And Prishadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid, and it fled from that place, while bleeding on the street. In the morning, when Prishadra, who was quite capable to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed a cow, although at night he thought he had killed a tiger, he was very unhappy. Although Prishadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest, Vashishta, cursed him, saying, in your next life you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a Shudra because of killing the cow. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada's comment to verse 9. It appears that Vashishta was not free from Tamaguna, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prishadra, Vashishta should have taken Prishadra's offense very lightly, but instead Vashishta cursed him to become a Shudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vashishta, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he was Durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. So in this case, we see in so many others he's doing nice, but in this one case, this is not proper. Like that, because either he should have, you know, taken it that this happened, it was an accident, so therefore what atonement can be done, and that, because Manu gives certain atonements and everything like that, so then this kind of thing should have been given, but instead he curses him, so that means he wasn't at this point dealing outside of the mode of ignorance.
And still this curse should be valid because it was pronounced by
Because he's in a proper position, the activity has been done, it should have been approached in a different way. It's different from, let's say, the curse of the king, don't even remember the names, of the Brahmachari, who was saying that he cursed him that he would not have any descendants because he wasn't accepting the Shraddha offering. Because the Brahmin said that there's hair in it, so it's impure, so it can't be. Means the Brahmin is eating on behalf of the forefathers. One, a Brahmin can't eat something with hair in it, and two, you can't offer that to the forefathers. So he refused it. The king got upset, thinking that there is no hair, or it is not impure, and you're just not accepting it. So he cursed him. And so then when it's pointed out there was a hair here, the Brahmin cursed the king that you'll be blind because if the hair is there, you can't see it. So then afterwards, then the king asked that you remove that curse. So he said, you'll become blind because it said, but then you'll regain your vision. And so he told the king, you should remove yours. And he said, I can't, I'm a Kshatriya. I still feel angry that you didn't accept. You know? And then the Brahmin said, but it doesn't matter anyway, because you said, because I'm taking something that's pure as impure, therefore I curse you this. But it was impure, so your curse has no effect anyway. So he just walked off. Like that. You know, so it was just out of etiquette they were doing. But it's about bottom line, it didn't have any meaning. So in here, then, it's a matter of how you deal with it. You should have dealt with it differently. When the hero Prishadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of Brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. Footnote 4. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, with folded hands he accepted the curse's mercy. He had devotion to Guru. He did not say, why did you uselessly curse me without reflecting first? Though cursed by his Guru, remaining faithful to Guru, he attained liberation without obstacles. That is the lesson of this story. Muni Priyam means a vow of celibacy. Right, you know, so it's dear to the Munis is celibacy. Right? So he took up that. So he maintained that faith in authority, that faith in the Guru, and he just took it as it was the Guru's blessings because now he doesn't have to get involved in family life and everything. So he just goes to the forest, gets involved in his austerities, and in this way he can elevate himself. So then Vishwanath's pointing out, this is the point to gain. Not looking, oh, how could they do this, how could this and that, and you know, the whole faith issue and all that kind of stuff. Thereafter, Prishadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in his mind, established control over all his senses, being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal towards everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus, Prishadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always kept keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord, and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. With this attitude, Prishadra became a great saint, and when he entered the forest and saw blazing fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 14. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. O Arjuna, Prishadra, because of his karma, was cursed to take his next birth as a Shudra, but because he took to saintly life, specifically concentrating his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became a pure devotee. Immediately after giving up his body in the fire, he reached the spiritual world, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Mameti, as a result of his devotional situation. Devotional service performed by thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that although Prishadra was cursed, he avoided the terrible consequence of becoming a Shudra and instead returned home back to Godhead, as stated in Brahma Samhita 5:54. Those who engage in devotional service are unaffected by the results of their material activities. Otherwise, everyone from the smallest microbe up to the king of heaven, Indra, is subject to the laws of karma. A pure devotee, being always engaged in the service of the Lord, is exempt from these laws. Right, so he doesn't have to take birth in this way. He just goes back to Godhead. Right, so he doesn't have to take a birth again. So that curse, that would be karma. But because of devotional service, that doesn't have effect. So he doesn't have to take his birth. Because if he was working within karma, then he would have to take birth. Verses 15 to 36. The dynasties of the sons of Vaivasvatamana. Sukadeva Goswami continued, being reluctant to accept material enjoyment, Manu's youngest son, whose name was Kavi, gave up the kingdom before attaining full youth. Accompanied by his friends, he went to the forest, always thinking of the self-effulgent Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart. Thus he attained perfection. Right? So this is, how you say, Vedic, you know, adolescent rebellion. Right? They give up the desire to control the kingdom, and then he goes off with his friends, and they go to the forest and practice austerities and become great devotees. Yes. Thus he attained perfection. From Karusha, another son of Manu, came the Karusha dynasty, a family of Kshatriyas. The Karusha Kshatriyas were the kings of the northern direction. They were celebrated protectors of Brahminical culture and were all firmly religious. Right, so you can see it's from both of these, like both of these brothers, then either one attains to the perfectional platform. Because one is just going to the forest, performing devotional service, the other one's performing his duties there, protecting the Brahmins and the culture, and so everything goes on nicely. So the point is any position then is useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's not that one is better than the other. That's the whole point to get beyond. Right? So, yeah. From the son of Manu named Drishta came a Kshatriya caste called Dharshta, whose members achieved the position of Brahmanas in this world. Then from the son of Manu, right, because before we were talking about it's by what is your position and nature. So they have the Brahminical nature, they're able to perform those duties, so they're accepting that. They're not maintaining themselves as kings and then doing Brahminical duty. No, they're functioning as Brahmins. Therefore, then it works very nicely. Then from the son of Manu named Riga came Sumati. From Sumati came Bhuta Jyoti, and from Bhuta Jyoti came Vasu. The son of Vastu was Pritaka, whose son was Oghavan. Oghavan's son was also known as Oghavan, and his daughter was Oghavati. Sudarshana married that daughter. From Narishyanta came a son named Chitrasena. From him a son named Riksha. From Riksha came Midvan. From Midvan came Purna. And from Purna came Indrasena. From Indrasena came Vitihotra. And from Vitihotra came Satyashrava. From Satyashrava came the son named Urushrava. And from Urushrava came Devadatta. From Devadatta came a son known as Agnivesha, who was the fire god Agni himself. This son, who was a celebrated saint, was well known as Kanina and Jatukarnya. O king, from Agnivesha came a Brahminical dynasty known as the Agnivesyayana. Now that I have described the descendants of Narishyanta, let me describe the descendants of Drishta. Please hear from me. Drishta had a son by the name Nabhaga. This Nabhaga, who was different from the Nabhaga described later, became a Vaishya by occupational duty. The son of Nabhaga was known as Balandana. The son of Balandana was Vatsa Priti, and his son was Pramshu. Pramshu's son was Pramati. Pramati's son was Kanitra. Kanitra's son was Chakshusha, and his son was Vimishati. The son of Vimishati was Rumba, whose son was the great and religious king Kaninetra. O king, the son of Kaninetra was king Karandharma. From Karandharma came a son named Avikshit, and from Avikshit a son named Maruta, who was the emperor. The great mystic Samvarta, the son of Angira, engaged Maruta in performing a sacrifice, yajna. The sacrificial paraphernalia of King Maruta was extremely beautiful, for everything was made of gold. Indeed, no other sacrifice could compare to his. In that sacrifice, King Indra became intoxicated by drinking a large quantity of soma rasa. The brahmanas received ample contributions, and therefore they were satisfied. Footnote 5. Because of the yajna performed by Maruta, everyone was pleased, especially the brahmins and kshatriyas. Brahmins are interested in receiving contributions as priests, and kshatriyas are interested in drinking. All of them, therefore, were satisfied with their different engagements. So everybody gets what the... That's the whole thing. The Vedic deals, everybody gets what they're looking for. So we see here also on that point of the position, so that one son, he became a Vaishya, but his son, they can continue on the Kshatriya line. Right? So he took up that occupation, but his son continued in the Kshatriya occupation.
How can one acquire one varna if not by birth?
By nature. Mm-hmm. Like that. So therefore his son had the Kshatriya nature, but he had the Vaishya nature. Just
that's
like
what determines
like,
one's varna. That's the nature.
Yes.
But how can you acquire varna?
Yeah, it means acquire means how do you mean by acquire?
No.
Means you go down to Macy's and then shop around or
want to know.
No, it means by your guna and karma, that establishes what varna you have. That's what you do. So it's means you're doing, but you have to also see what's the whole consideration. So he maintained himself as a Vaishya, but his son then carried on maintaining as Kshatriya. Right? And we see those others, the, what were they called? The Darshtas. Then they maintained themselves as Brahmins. So they took up the brahminical occupation. Mm-hmm. So it's whatever the nature is, that one you do, that you can be consistent at according to the rules that are there, then that's then what becomes your varna. Is that? Yes.
At the time of birth, according to his time of birth, some varna is given. That is
no, but that's another aspect. That may be, see, as you have the two things, what is the varna means to be his occupation, and what's the varna that is the, you could say, aspect of nature, and that's applied within, generally, for marriage.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So you're trying to match everything in these ways. But now, whether that will become his occupation, that you have to see. Because you're born with one thing, but what you do is another. Like that. So if he maintains that, then yes, that will continue. For that sacrifice, the various demigods who control the winds offered foodstuffs, and the Vishvadevas were members of the assembly. Maruta's son was Dama. Dama's son was Rajyavardhana. Rajyavardhana's son was Sudriti, and his son was Nara. The son of Nara was Kevala, and his son was Dundhuman, whose son was Vegavan. Vegavan's son was Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of this earth. The best of the Apsaras, the highly qualified girl named Alambusha, accepted the similarly qualified Trinabindu as her husband. She gave birth to a few sons and a daughter known as Ilavila. After the great saint Vishrava, the master of mystic yogi, received absolute knowledge from his father, he begot in the womb of Ilavila, the greatly celebrated son known as Kuvera, the giver of money. Trinabindu had three sons named Vishala, Sunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. Among these three, Vishala created a dynasty and constructed a palace called Vaishali. The son of Vishala was known as Hemachandra. His son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama. Those sons were Devaja and Krishashva. The son of Krishashva was Somadatta, who performed Ashwamedha sacrifice and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet to which great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All these kings appeared in the dynasty of Vishala, properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabindu. And so, in other words, they follow in their predecessors. So, as great kings, just like in the Yadu dynasty, they follow the Yadu or the Bharata, Rishabdev, all these great personalities, then they try to manage, they become inspired by how they ran the kingdom, they try to do the same. So in the same way, in the brahminical lines, and there's always somebody who you're trying to follow. Conclusion. Qualities determines one's varna and not birth. This is because birth is not important. Darshtas converted themselves to Brahmins, though born as Kshatriyas. This gives clear evidence supporting the following statement by Narada. If the qualities of one group are found in the men of another, those men should be recognized by their qualities, by their symptoms, not by the caste of the family in which they were born. A Brahmana may be changed into a Kshatriya, and a Kshatriya into a Brahmana. Similarly, a Brahmana or Kshatriya may be changed into a Vaishya, and a Vaishya into a Brahmana or Kshatriya. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnyam Mayashrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagashaha, Bhagavad Gita 4.31, Upanaya. Hence, it's one's qualities that are stressed in all Vedic literature. So one is a Brahmin, Kshatriya or Vaishya, never by birth, but by quality. Right? So that's what you're looking at, is the quality they have. The skill anybody can do, right? But it's the quality that's what actually makes one. It means you have to have the combination. But even if you have the quality but not so much skill, you're still categorized in there. You know, just like you have that, you've seen shops in Calcutta where they're basically about the size of, you know, a cabinet, right? And then the fun part is it's split in half, and the guy sitting on top is one shop, and then one guy sitting underneath, and that's another shop, you know? So it's like, you know, it's like, you know, the rent for 1 square meter, right? You know, so, and then it's by half because the guy below also is, you know. So they're smaller, they're vaishyas, they're businessmen, but at the same time, they're just smaller businessmen. Right? That's all. So that's the point, is that the quality is the main thing. And then the skill, that will say what's the quantity of the manifestation of that. But if the quality is not enough, then that's what makes the difference. Just like you have somebody with lots of land, he has a small army and everything like that. But why is he doing that? So the Kshatriya will be taking tax to protect the people. The Vaishya will protect the people so he can take tax. You understand? That's the difference. So you see in history so much of this. You know, the different, in European history a lot, you see all these, the different barons and this and that. Some of them is just business. So it's very blurred there between the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, because the Vaishyas are the aristocracy. In the West, you have nobility and aristocracy. But in the Vedic, it's just Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, they're all called aristocracy. Right? But otherwise, if you're using the modern aristocracy, means from the business community. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's difficult to acquire qualification and skills without the qualities behind them, right?
Yes, but sometimes you can do it. It's just, you know, just like somebody has a hobby. Somebody can be very good at music, but they don't have the mentality to be a musician. Because to be a musician, you have to have a certain mentality. So they have the skill. So for them, it's only a hobby. So that's why in the Vedic system, so many of the arts, these are hobbies for those of the higher orders. But if it's an occupation, that establishes them one as an artist.
So varna is a motivation, right?
Yes. Varna means what you do to economically maintain yourself. Right? And so let's say you have someone who's selling paintings, but that doesn't make him an artist, because the point is he gets them, whether he does them himself or something, but the whole point is that. But another one, it's about the painting, and then if he sells one, great. You know? Does that make sense? Because the Shudra sits around and waits. The Vaishya goes out and makes it happen. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Right. One is for economics, but when we define Kshatriya and Brahmana doing something for money, we say that it's Vaishya mentality.
Because what's the profit of the Kshatriya? Protection of the people. Because he comes into the kingdom with nothing. He was a brahmachari with nothing. He comes in, then he's the king. Then when he leaves, he goes out with him nothing. He doesn't take anything with him. Right? It's not like, oh, this is my favorite, and then takes it with him. Right? He goes out with nothing. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. Right? And the Brahmins, then theirs is knowledge. That's their profit. Money is just so that you can do your duty. So for Vaishyas, then the money itself, that's the profit. For the Shudra, he may get money, he needs the money to maintain, but it's the fame. Right? If the Shudra had money but no fame and nobody cared, he would not be happy. But even if he doesn't have money but he's famous, then he's good. Right? You don't hear of artists, celebrities getting into drinking and all that because they lost money, because they lose fame. Right? They generally lose money because they're already drinking. Right? They don't know what to do with their money. That's another thing. You understand? So it's a different mentality of what's their profit. Right? But in the Brahminical culture, then everybody's about Krishna consciousness. So it's just a matter of which area you're engaging in the Lord's service. So it's not actually for the devotee any of those is profit. Those are just the commodity that he works with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can, even though we're devotees and Brahminical by ashram, can Brahminical occupation be a hobby, kind of? I mean,
no, that's the ashram. Mm-hmm. That's the ashram.
So it's not hobby.
No, that's not an hobby. A hobby means this generally would fall into the categories of the arts. You know what I'm saying? Means that everybody has sciences that they follow, and then to apply the science as an art. You know, it's just like in medicine, you have the science of what medicine goes with what and all these different things. Then you have the art of how you pick it, how you prepare the medicine, how you apply the medicine. So someone might be for them, you know, just a hobby. They like making medicines and that. So you go to their house, they have all kinds of far out things. But it's not an occupation. Does that make sense? So the arts, then those are hobbies. That's what the 64 arts are for, because they're used in the social context. Because that's how you interact in all these things. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the typical thing. You have all the boys down at the club and all that. So they're all, you know, aristocracy or nobility or something like that. But, you know, for fun, they get around, gather around the piano. Someone plays the piano. They all sing songs. But they're not musicians. They're never going to make money as musicians. But they know music. So it's just part of, you know, being cultured. You're expected to know these things. Does that make sense? So that's why someone may have a wide range, but he's categorized by what it is you do for money. Does that make sense? But you also see other things, how they go. So is it a matter of, means that you're born in a certain situation, you'll be generally dealt with like that until you actually manifest your nature. Right? You're born as a Kshatriya, you're dealt with as a Kshatriya until with training in the Gurukul, then it's observed that you're a Brahmin Kshatriya or Vaishya. Right? So then after that, then that will be how you'll be considered. Right? But now if there's any difficulty in performing that duty, you may be performing duties of another Varna to maintain yourself. So there's a difference between being born in one situation and taking up the occupation of another. And that's being your varna. And one, it is your varna, but you don't have the opportunity to perform it, so therefore you're using another one to maintain yourself. Right? So you might have someone who's born in a Vaishya family, they have the nature of a Brahmin and that, but not being able to maintain themselves that way, they're doing business. Right? But their preferred lifestyle and where they engage themselves will be in the Brahminical activities. So whenever there's an opportunity for that, they do that. And they'll maintain business as much as possible. Well, does that make sense? So you have to have this combination. That's why it gets complicated. Yeah. Yeah. And except for, in other words, the Veda, it's complex on the intellectual and emotional platform, but on the mechanical platform, you keep it simple. You know, the wheels on the chariot rattle, right? Well, on the modern, we like the mechanical very, very sophisticated, but when it comes to philosophy, culture, and all that kind of, we like it as simple as possible. You know, basically, we just want to know if they fit into, are they us or are they them, right? You know, then that works it all out. Then after that, you know, you can take it from there.
Yeah. So, Maharaj, what about a woman? I mean, they are Varna.
But what about?
I identify their Varna.
Means they have a nature also. But socially, they'll function according to whatever their husband is, or whatever their father or son, like that. But they have a nature themselves.
But still, they have to follow the Varna of their husband or
Yeah, so that's why you marry someone of equal nature. That's what Manu says. So if you have a Brahmin girl, she marries a Brahmin boy. Then following works. But if she's a Kshatriya and he's a Brahmin, then it doesn't work quite as well. But, you know what I'm saying? That's why then mixed varnas aren't recommended. Because the girl does have a nature. But as far as, because he's following that occupation, then that's going to be socially how you deal. Does that make sense?
So, like, in modern times, women also have to work. So...
I don't know. In modern times, was anybody working? I just remember Charlie and the big guy.
I mean, most of women have to work. Like,
yeah, then?
So they work also have to...
Yeah, so they work according to their nature. So you can work either just as a woman, and then in those things that just accommodate that, you know, the simpler kind of things like that. That's what the Vedas recommend. So therefore, then they just take up things that are activities that women in the ashram side are comfortable with. But otherwise, in the modern scenario, then they'll have to take up the occupations according to the varna side. But it won't be as good, because the difficulty comes down is that the nature is still there, and so the sense of the sense of ownership and all that is there. And so then how will things go nicely? You know what I'm saying? So let's say you have the man, he runs a company. You know, it's his company, but it's a company that makes money. Right? And so it's the science of money, and so then he runs like that. And then if he needs, he goes, you go public and all that, and then if it's time, then the shareholders kick him out. You know, it's not good, but it happens. He'll just start another one. Okay? So the woman, it's her company, so then she doesn't want to go public, but then you can't. If you don't go public, she won't have the money. Then if she does go public, and they don't like her, and they kick her out, then she's devastated, because it's hers. You understand? So that's why it's not ideal, because the feminine nature is the nature, but it fits into these categories. Right? Just masculine nature is there, and then it fits into Brahmacharya. But so feminine nature is there, it fits into these. But the point is that prominence will be there. So therefore, in the home, the woman's nature will be the strongest, and in the occupation, the man's will be the strongest. Does that make sense? So when you put the woman into that and you switch it, it won't be as strong. You know what I'm saying? They may do very well and all that, but then look at how is the home life going? She's a professional lady, big this, that, but how is her home life going? And if she can balance that, it means they're very qualified. But the point is how many cases like that are there?
Mother teacher.
Yes. You know, you have one or two here and there. But generally you see it up on the bigger. Yeah, because anyway, your Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya, they're going to be less. So most have a job working for somebody.
So it's better for a woman to stay at home as a household.
The point is it's better for women to be in a protected environment. That's what's better. So it's not about being at home, it's about being in a protected environment. You know, because too much emphasis is put on, no, women should be in the home, but then define home. Right? So at least in America, home is where the heart is. So that means that there must be a heart, there must be the emotions, there must be all that kind of thing. So is that what's going on there?
Comfort zone. Comfort zone.
Yeah. Is that what's going on there? And if that is, yes, that will be better. But if that's not, then you can't say that that's actually the better position. So in other words, it's not an excuse for the men to be rat bags. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to take the whole package. The Veda, it's all goes together. Because women are to be respected, so that means they're respected there in the home. They're respected in the home, taken care of. You don't have to get the respect outside, because who's going to actually respect you outside? You know what I'm saying? In your home, you'll get respect. Outside, you won't get respect. And if you make that respect happen, yes, you have the respect. It's very superficial. You know what I'm saying? If a large female dog comes up, it's got big teeth, and it's growling, you respect it. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that. I think a large female, anything with teeth and growling, you'll respect, right? A tigress, a lion, you know, and you're just going to respect. You know what I'm saying? So it's a balance. The whole thing is there. What's the whole point? Is to be Krishna conscious, to be comfortable in one's position. So it's a lot bigger than just, okay, this position, that position. That's all the more West can do. Point is no. It's a matter of there's the whole relationship and everything. That's the main thing. That's understood, then it works. And if not, then even there at home, it doesn't mean it'll work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, chapter 3, the marriage of Sukanya and Chavana Muni. That's a fun one. Yeah, no, we're getting all the far out stories. It's kind of like the ninth canto is like the Atharva Veda. And it's just all the far out stories are all there.
And the story of the cursing his disciple and his disciple overcoming the curse and going back to Godhead despite being cursed by his guru.
Right.
Seems in that story the disciple is more glorious than the guru.
Means like that, from the devotional point of view, yes. Like that. And so, yeah, he's manifesting the good qualities and all that. So it happens. That's the whole point where Prabhupada says is for the devotee. Let's say you make someone else a devotee, but you're happy, you know, the Vaishnava is happy to see them advance, even if they advance more than you, like that. And so that's just the thing, because if you're connected to them, it's like Sukracharya. Because he was acting actually on for the benefit of his disciple, even though he was taking a material approach, and his disciple was taking a spiritual approach, he still gets the benefit because he's attached to a devotee. So therefore, if the disciple then goes back to Godhead, then Vishishta will get benefit for that. So that's the thing about the devotional process. It works either way. You know. So if one maintains the qualities, one follows the etiquettes and all that, then there's always benefit. That's the thing of the Vedic. It may come later. It may come in this way. While the modern, it doesn't really deal with it. It seems like it's fair now, but it doesn't work out good later. You know, that's the advantage of the Vedic, like that. So yes, so the point is if the disciple goes on and properly does everything, then he'll advance anyway, because the guru is simply representing Krishna. He's following the orders, and so therefore it works.
So in this instance, it seems that behavior, meaning the behavior of the disciple, is supersedes blessings of the guru. So it's
no, but the that was a curse. But the blessings that he will. The point is he's following the instructions of how to do all those things that he learned from the guru. So for those aspects, that's fine. It's just that. For that one situation, that will go on the other. So the point is that still he's connected with that aspect of following the authority, because that's his success is coming because he's doing that. So that still remains intact. It's just that who may get better advantage from that instruction coming in the line. So he sees that the disciple got more advantage than the guru, just like we see in Dhruva Maharaj. He got more advantage than his mother had, but because his mother's connected to him, therefore she got benefit. Like that. That's the glory of the process. Is that if the instruction coming down from Krishna through the parampara is followed, then anyone who follows at any point, they can perfect the life and go back to Godhead. like that. And so then anyone who's connected to them, they also get the benefit. That's why, like a devotee, you have family members, and they'll get benefit from your devotional service, even if they're not favorable. If they're favorable, then things work better. But if they're not, they still get benefit. Okay. So,
what kind of benefit we can get?
What kind of benefit? Yeah. Means, what do you call it? Was it a car in every garage? No, a pot, a chicken in every pot, and a car in every garage? That kind of benefit?
I mean, devotional benefit.
Devotional benefits.
Yeah.
No, that means the point is that if there's some attachment from that way, then there'll be agyata sukriti. So then that will have that aspect. But if it's not, then it's just that they're connected, then they'll get liberation.
Liberation?
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Got the thing? Got the sukriti. Yeah, okay. Liberation. Ah, now we're talking. Okay. Okay.
I wouldn't mind some liberation mixed in with my bhakti.
Okay. No, the point is liberation, bhakti already includes liberation. Just like when you order some food, it already comes on a plate. You don't have to order the plate, you know. You don't have to tell them, I'll take the salad. And, oh, can I come put it on a plate, you know. You know, it comes along with it, so you don't have to worry about that.
So what about the car in the garage?
The car in the garage. But, no, he didn't care about these things. So see, he's not... It's not karma, Mr. Bhakti. He's engaging jnana, Mr. Bhakti. Right? So the liberation is the.
But his liberation is included. I'm just wondering, car and garage also included.
That's another thing, but he wasn't interested, so we were not getting into that topic. So.
Can I have a car or not?
What kind of car?
The person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft. Giving in charity, performing the pasyas, of doing yajnas, or of pursuing philosophical or fruitive activities.
Yeah.
Eighth chapter.
Okay. Yeah. So all that goes. So one, it means the benefits of that are already gained in devotional service. So whatever one would gain, whatever comfortableness and this and that, that's there. The other thing is it can also manifest that you have those things. So it's up to Krishna how he likes. That was what was the previous canto, was discussing that. That was a major thing in that canto. It's all under the control of Krishna. So you have the laws, but it's still under control of Krishna. Right? And so then here is even then we're trying to understand how to interpret and understand the laws. Because we're used to it and it's just straightforward kind of thing. But when things are kind of start to get not, when it becomes hazy, how to deal with it. Like that.
That's something that always amazes me about reading the Vedas. You know, like how intricate and complicated it comes. You know, like Bhishma being on the side of Duryodhana and
yes.
Why he's on the side of Duryodhana, but
yes.
He's a great devotee, and then,
yes. Because they perform their duties. And so then in that, but at the same time as they're absorbed in their devotional service. So the things run together. Like that. You know, like that, like Prabhupada says, like with Yudhishthira Maharaj, he's a devotee, so that bhakti path is going, but as a kshatriya, he follows those duties, so these two go together. Like that. And that way, so he has to do both. You do your duties within the Varnashram system, but your focus is on devotion, so the devotional is developing. Like that. Because we're not used to different things can be functioning at once. We're used to just want this or that, or, you know, it makes it easy. You know, so that's the thing, is that it's both. So then where the one is considered, you focus there. Where the other is considered, you focus there. So, you know, so what side it goes on, then he takes that because of those considerations of Dharma. But as far as where his heart is, and that is with the Pandavas, because they're devotees. But his occupation, then he's fighting for Duryodhana. Yes.
You mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that verse Apichatsu Dacharam, which abominable actions of the Prabhupada writes in the purport, there are two parallel lines. There's constitutional and conditional.
Yes.
And sometimes the cross and the one is strike more on constitutional rather than understand the conditionalist.
Yes. So in other words, they're going, so there may be difficulties with the conditional, but you if the focus is on, because the problem is why we have conditional is because the constitutional is not there. So the cultivation of the constitutional is what's actually going to solve the problems of the conditional. So if means we can raise the conditional position over many, many lifetimes, basically meaning hundreds and thousands. If you want to be able to do it immediately, then that has to be done by devotional service. So only by, if there's a problem in the conditional, only the constitutional can solve that. But this idea is no, we'll solve it on the conditional platform. That's for those who actually don't know the science. You know what I'm saying? You know, children, they think anything's possible. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. Okay, Pratigya, if any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. Because this is victory for a woman. Sukanya was the beautiful young daughter of a king, and Chavana was the old and very irritable. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. Therefore, it is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. So that's the point, is the victory. So it's not just submissive. It's a matter of that submissive is the technique to accomplish what needs to be done. Does that make sense? Because there's tactic. Just like for him to accomplish, then it's about how he deals with the wife. In other words, the wife is trying to please the husband is trying to please the wife. That combination makes it very strong. Right? Even if one is doing, then it can kind of make it work. And if the other one then catches it, then it will come around. But otherwise, then it's weak that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the dynasties of Saryati, another son of Manu, and also tells about Sukanya and Revati. Devagya Saryati gave instructions about what to do in the ritualistic ceremony observed on the second day of the yajna of the Angirashas. One day, Saryati, along with his daughter, known as Sukanya, went to the ashram of Chavana Muni. There Sukanya saw two glowing substances within a hole of earthworms, and by chance she pierced those two glowing substances. As soon as she did this, blood began to ooze from that hole. Consequently, King Saryati and his companions suffered from constipation and inability to pass urine. When the king asked why circumstances had suddenly changed, he found that Sukanya was the cause of this misfortune. Then they all offered prayers to Chavana Muni just to satisfy him according to his own desire. And Devagya Saryati offered his daughter to Chavana Muni, who was a very old man. When the heavenly physicians, the Ashwini Kumara's brothers, once visited Chavana Muni, the Muni requested them to give him back his youth. These two physicians took Chavana Muni to a particular lake in which they bathed and regained full youth. After this, Sukanya could not distinguish her husband. She then surrendered unto the Ashwini Kumaras, who were very satisfied with her chastity, and who therefore introduced her again to her husband. Chavana Muni then engaged King Saryati in performing the Soma Yajna and gave the Ashwini Kumaras the privilege to drink Soma Rasa. The King of Heaven, Lord Indra, became very angry at this, but he could do no harm to Saryati. Henceforward, the Ashwini Kumara physicians were able to share in the Soma Rasa. Saryati later had three sons named Uttana Bharti, Antartha, and Burishena. Artha had one son whose name was Revata. Reva had 100 sons, of whom the eldest was Kakudmi. Kakudmi was advised by Lord Brahma to offer his beautiful daughter, Revati, to Baladev, who belongs to the Vishnu Tattva category. After doing this, Kakudmi retired from family life and entered the forest of Bhadarikashram to execute austerities and penances. Shloka and Sharana, yes.
I always wonder in the story of Chaivana Muni, you know, the two glowing eyes in the hole,
mm-hmm.
and then she pokes it.
Yes.
And he's looking at her, he's checking her out, you know, from inside the head.
Not necessarily, because in yoga trance, the eyes are half open, and so then for these austerities, he'll be glowing, so his eyes would be glowing. So then.
He was very attracted to
him. That's after. When he came out. But at that time, then, because they offered, so then he was attracted, so then. So the point is it's just like you had those five apsaras who became cursed to become crocodiles in South India. Because they came along, they said, Brahmacharya, and he was lighting up the whole forest with his effulgence. So then you put it in the anthill, and so then, you know, the effulgence comes out. So she sees it, so she's wondering. So it's probably, you know, just trying to see if you could find the bugs and get them out or something, or what it is, but then she finds out it's not bugs. Okay.
So why Bhagavatam tells stories like this story? Seems quite mundane, you know.
So you think they should just say...
Like
Muni meditated, and in this way, he was able to understand and cross through the gate of no gate. So that would be better. You would be happier with that. Or? See, it's like this. We see it as mundane because our vision is mundane. Does that make sense? Because the point is in here there's certain things to be learned that must be understood in the devotional process. Right? Because you're working within the devotional process. You're a devotee, but you have an occupation, you have a family and all these, so you don't have to deal with all these things. So then these stories bring out how those things are properly engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So these have already been covered by the earlier cantos. So now this coming up, these are then dealing with cases that aren't your standard cases. All the other stuff is pretty standard. Though it's, you know, it's getting a little bit, with seventh canto, it's getting a little out. But before that, it's very standard. Right? With seventh canto, we introduce that it's about devotional service, that's the main thing. And when we see that, then it doesn't matter. Backward, then we can deal with stories like this. Does that make sense? Because you notice what happened is that, in one sense, is that issues are kind of have been gone for, it means like, you know, seventh, eighth canto, we didn't really deal with any issues because it's just about pure devotional service. Now, understanding that when we're getting to the ninth, now again, it's back to issues. Right? Why? Because now we're seeing is that you have the primary point, but the secondary point, because it's so prominent for us, we forget about the primary. And then the secondary is not your standard, so therefore what's going on here. So what it is that we're supposed to come to the point where we can accommodate these two. Is that you have the primary and its natural standard, and then you have the primary and not necessarily up to the standard, but you can still see in the proper light. Does that make sense? So that's what's necessary. Then one can see properly in that broad-minded way. So it's how to function in these and be Krishna conscious. Like we see before, Priyavrata, he's doing all the duties of a king and all that, but he's doing all the yajnas and everything they expect. So even though they may be kamika, he's still Krishna conscious and sees everything in relationship to the Lord. This is offered to Indra, but the potency of that is coming from Krishna. So Krishna's Indra, so it's an offering to Krishna. So he's able to see like that, even though he's performing his ordinary duties. So in this way, when the duties are a little bit out of you know, the standard context, to be able to still do that, that's then what we're learning. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the whole idea is that since everything is Krishna, there isn't anything mundane. So it's a matter of how, in this case, do I see this all connected to Krishna so I can put it together so that I can have the best Krishna conscious application. So technically, why we say is that mundane is because we're seeing mundane. If we see everything's Krishna, where's the mundane? Does that make sense? So if we see the mundane, then what are the duties, how we should follow, how to work that out? We see the transcendental, so how to work that out connected to Krishna. So in any case, working out the situation, that would be there in both.
Like in this story, from the Muni side, actually he fell down from his yoga practice.
No, but that's another one. I think you're thinking of Sobari Muni.
This Muni also, he married with this girl.
You know. Because now he's blind, how is he going to do his duties? Right, so even figuring out where the river is and stuff like that, so. He's still living as a Brahmin and doing everything like that.
A yogi doesn't need eyesight, he just meditates.
See, it's very easy for you to say. You know what I'm saying? But where does it say that? How many yogis and all that? And he's, is it in here? We're going to get into the, where did we get into those? You have the different. I think it was Prajapatis. They go out and do yoga for 10,000 or 60,000 years, and after seeing the super soul getting his blessings, then they'd have children. So the point is, yes, Cardano. So all these you see is that these are various religious processes that are used, right? So devotional service is the main one. So if, depending upon your situation, you use one religious process or another, that's not actually the question. Is it connected to Krishna? Because you can use all these different processes, you'll get various effects on the platform of karma and jnana. But the point is unless it's connected to Krishna, you won't get bhakti, and so therefore with time it'll be wasted, because within the particular body you have, that keeps changing. So therefore you want to work on the eternal platform. Therefore, sarva dharmam parityaja, you only take up bhakti, and it's not about the other religions. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we have to always come back to that point. Otherwise, then we can find fault, but the point is then you have to train in what's the primary. That takes more. That takes more commitment. That takes getting through to the various students. While throwing out something that's an issue, as long as you can find one that's good in the classroom, then all the students, then they'll start arguing with each other, and the teacher can sit back and feel, I've done a good job. And then depending who committed themselves and argued better, then he gets a better grade than the person who didn't really get into it, even though the whole thing is actually useless. Right, so it's just a matter of if, you know, somebody got an A in uselessness or they were useless in uselessness. You know. But then, let's say we put out a plate of donuts, now let's see who does better. You know what I'm saying? So you might find the guy that was useless, he actually, you know, is not hungry, while all the other guys that are so good in the grades, now they're hungry. So then it comes down to, well, actually, who should get the A here? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like that. You have to see the context within there. We can. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini ki.